Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Taking a deep breath after an emotional early week for the Grizzlies, we'll look at some news, a few interesting numbers, answer some of your questions, and you had some good ones. We'll answer those coming up. Also, a 3Q preview of the Portland Trail Blazers, and a heck of a lot more. Thanks for joining me. You are Locked On Grizzlies.
Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into this Thursday edition of Locked On Grizzlies. My name is Peter Edmiston. I am host of Owolo and Peter in the Morning, 7 to 10, Sports 56 WHBQ. I am also a numbers game columnist for the, or contributor, or writer, I don't know. I write the numbers game. Just let's leave it at that. I write the numbers game for the Commercial Appeal on a, like I would say now, we're kind of bumping it up a little bit once or twice a week. So you'll see, you know, some weeks when I do multiple numbers games a week. Also, of course, I am the host of this podcast and thrilled to be bringing this to you on a daily basis here on the Locked On Podcast Network. So much to discuss coming up in the next little bit. Some news to start with, and then we'll get to your questions. I threw out the opportunity to ask some questions that you wanted me to take a crack at in the Q&A. You had some Q's, so I'm going to give you some A's. We're going to do that later on in the podcast. The Grizzlies did not practice today, understandably so. Monday, double overtime. Tuesday was a day of, you know, another tough game, another close one. Grizzlies do that an awful lot, and I'll tell you some numbers about that here momentarily. But with all the physical and emotional exertion, Grizzlies didn't practice today. Made a lot of sense. They will have their normal shoot-around. They didn't have a shoot-around Tuesday, actually, before the Sixer game. They'll have a shoot-around before the Blazer game today. But then beyond that, you know, I think they're going to take it relatively light, because it's been a rough stretch. One kind of semi-promising thing coming off of the injury report for this game is that Vince Carter has been upgraded to questionable with the hip situation that he's dealing with. Now, I would say it's unlikely that Vince plays a role in the game tonight against the Blazers, but it's possible. You know, he was struggling even before he got injured. He had kind of fallen off a little bit. Not unexpected, given his age. He's the oldest player in the NBA. You know that if you're listening to this podcast. It was asking a lot for the guy to be that good for that long. He fell off a little bit. Hopefully the rest and the recovery will have done him some good. And when he comes back, he can get back to the way he was playing at the beginning of the year, which was absolutely sensational. There is nothing new on Chandler Parsons, and that is in spite of the Sportando report. And I didn't get into it yesterday because there was so much around Zach Randolph and the emotion of that game and all that. But there, if you missed it, in the hours leading up to the game on Tuesday, there was a report from Sportando that is, I think Sportando is kind of an aggregator, a news site that's based in Europe, and they bring together, and a lot of times they're a good resource for stuff that's happening in Europe or for European players, European-based players. They can do a good job of finding that stuff out that you might not necessarily know, but they just kind of busted out of nowhere with a report about Chandler Parsons that he would have to undergo season-ending knee surgery, that his knee wasn't responding to the treatment for the bone bruise the way that was expected. This was a report, quite frankly, out of nowhere from an outlet that, you know, Sportando has always done okay as far as I'm concerned. I follow them. I've dealt with them once or twice. I've never had any major issues with them. Nice folks over there from what I can gather. But this was clearly wrong, or at least wrongly sourced, because Chandler Parsons himself pushed back against this pretty quickly. The Grizzlies had their Grind City media arm push back against it pretty quickly with the information from Michael Wallace and all of that coordinated stuff from the team. And so the Sportando folks, you know, backed down and said that the guy that initially was doing the reporting, or the guy that was the leading source of this thing, would be relieved of his job, which I think is a little bit on the harsh side. And I think most Grizzly fans kind of responded online in that vein. I mean, you got it wrong and got it badly wrong. Now, you know, that said, who knows what's going to happen with Chandler Parsons? I mean, you hope that he comes back, and there's always a little nervousness with the Grizzlies and knees, Chandler Parsons and knees too. But you know, there were similar stuff. Like, I remember around the same time last year, the discussion about Jordan Adams and you know and Brandon Wright too, and you know that he wouldn't have needed surgery for his knee, and then it turned out that he did. Jordan Adams, same kind of deal. So, you know, that's when you have that kind of environment, then it's understandable when a report like that comes out that there's some folks that will jump to believe it because it does sound believable. But in this case, I think it's pretty clear that they got it wrong. They admitted they got it wrong. And as far as we know, there's been nothing new, surprise, surprise, with regard to Chandler Parsons, other than they are going to reevaluate him in the next week or so. And then we'll just kind of see where things stand from there. But no season-ending knee surgery or anything like that is on the docket. He is continuing to rehab as expected. You had questions, I've got answers. Time now for the Locked On Grizzlies Q&A. Q, Brandon C, at Ball from Grace. Love Brandon. Thank you for listening. He asks, would you give Mark one or more games off against Cleveland and or Golden State? Of course, coming up, you've got Portland tonight. You've got the Warriors on Saturday. Then you've got the double dip against Cleveland. A really tough four-game stretch. If you're asking me about Mark's minutes, those of you that listen know the answer, know how I feel about it. I am much more on the worrying side than most. I don't know what the plan is with regard to this minutes limitation or maintenance plan or whatever. I don't know where they're at on that. But it does feel as though he has played a whole lot. I mean, if you look at his minutes now on average, he's right at what he was averaging last year, and last year was a very high mark for him. Minutes wise, it was the most he had played in in 2 or 3 years prior to the 15-16 season. And he's right up on that same number now, having played 34, 35 on Tuesday night and then, you know, 45 on Monday night. So, you know, I don't know. I would try my best to find a way to give him a game against Cleveland off, probably the one at Cleveland, because I think it's better to rest guys or to do any kind of maintenance stuff away from home. I would say you're unlikely to win in Cleveland. I mean, I think we all know what happened last year in the magical Tony Allen and Mario Chalmers game, where the team, and that was the real nasty nine, or the hateful eight, I think it was at that point. They went in there and won. So, yeah, anything could happen. But I just firmly believe if this foot thing, you know, the chickens at some point are going to have to come home to roost, right? You got to get some rest in with this guy that's coming off of a broken navicular. He's played out of his mind, and his foot does look really good. So maybe he's over it, but it still worries me. So to answer the question, you're not likely to win in Cleveland, so I'd rest him there and play the rest as best you can. One other small factor, the Warriors, word is, I read Anthony Slater, I think it was, from out in the Bay Area, that said that Steve Kerr plans on resting at least some of his guys. At some point, they will be on the road trip that starts tonight in Utah and then continues, of course, Memphis Saturday night. Word is that Steve Kerr will rest some guys in some games on this trip. I think it's a 5-game and 7-night kind of trip. all of them on the road. That's pretty demanding. He's going to rest some guys. He didn't say whether that would be in Memphis or who it would be. The thought is that it might well be a guy like, you know, Iguodala or Livingston, but there will be some games, one or two, where the big guns sit. And obviously, if you can find out that status, then maybe that affects, you know, whether Mark plays in that game or not. If you have a chance to beat the Warriors, you know, then you probably take advantage of that as best you can. So keep that in mind, too, when you're watching. Next question coming to us from True NBA Fan, at True NBA Fan. Can you ask Coach Fizz what's his eyesight without the stylish spectacles? I can. Not right now, but I will at some point. I'll get back to you on that. I do know I saw his glasses from the, like, from a different angle, and there's definitely some serious prescription stuff happening there. He's got eyesight like mine. He's got rough eyesight. Those are not decorative glasses. Next up, Josh Rodriguez at JWR005 asks, will Andrew Harrison / Wade Baldwin be able to slow down CJ McCollum or Dame? That would be a question. And heck, you know what? Let's throw that in as one of the 3Q preview questions. We're going to get to that later on the podcast, but heck, maybe I'll just make it a 2Q preview. The short answer is no. The Blazers lost tonight up in, or I guess last night. I'm taping this as the game ended, but the Blazers lost Wednesday night 115-107 in Milwaukee, even though McCollum and Lillard combined for 53 points on 17 of 33, shooting 30 for Dame. They really didn't have much of an answer for the Bucks. Another triple-double for Greek Freak in that game, 15, 12, and 11 with four block shots. The dude he's doing some crazy stuff this year. I don't know if he's flying under the radar, but people are talking about Russell Westbrook, and rightly so. Klay Thompson, rightly so. All these Greek Freak at 22 is scary, what he's doing. So anyway, I don't think Portland has much of an answer for him. They didn't have an answer for Jabari Parker either. Portland inside struggles mightily. So as to whether Wade Baldwin or Andrew Harrison is going to be able to stop Damian Lillard or CJ McCollum, no, they're probably not. But that's okay considering the rest of this Blazers squad, the weaknesses they've got there. They're just now kind of getting Al-Farouq Aminu back into the mix. He's one of the better defenders in the league. He played 18 minutes tonight. You saw Mo Harkless, who's kind of a do-everything guy for them. You know, if he's not having a good game, they really do struggle. And he was pretty good tonight, actually, but too many turnovers were problematic for him. Mason Plumlee, not a great matchup for Marc Gasol. I mean that on Mark's behalf. I think, you know, Mark will have no problems dealing with Plumlee in this ball game. And then Evan Turner's been a real disappointment. Alan Crabb as well off the bench. Those guys, you know, each struggling in their own way. Better game for Crabb last night, but he's not found the magic that he had late last year. And Evan Turner, I didn't get the signing at the time. I still don't get the signing now, and it is moving into bust territory pretty quickly. I don't think Andrew Harrison will be able to stop CJ McCollum or Dame. I don't think Wade Baldwin will either, but the Grizzlies will still win the game by one possession, probably last second. I don't know. Let's give it to Deontay Davis. He'll have a tip-in on a lob play with 0.2 seconds left somehow. Right? I mean, that's how the Grizzlies are going to win this thing. I do think Lillard and McCollum will probably have big nights, but the Grizzlies have plenty of ways to win, even if that is the case, because the rest of the Blazers are struggling. Next up on the old question line, go to Ruben Garrido at R Garrido 1, who says, why does it feel like we give up more open threes than most? Frustrating. Hashtag go Grizz. Thank you, Ruben. Well, I will tell you this. In terms of the open threes, it's all about how you characterize those. But I do know this. We were talking about the Bucks earlier. they lead the league in three-point frequency from their opponents. Their opponents shoot threes against them 36% of the time. But the Grizzlies are second. 34.6% of opponents' shots against the Grizzlies are threes. So if you think you are seeing a lot of threes against the Grizzlies, that is because you are. Now, in terms of contesting those threes, they are sixth best in the league, per the NBA and Sportview, in three-point contest percentage. They contest threes at a rate that is sixth best in the league. So I don't know that they necessarily give up more open threes than most. You know, it may feel that way because they give up so many threes, period. But in this case, I think that might be a little bit deceptive based on the numbers. And they defend it reasonably well. It's still not an absolute strength for them, but they do defend it reasonably well. I am a firm believer. There are, you know, some different schools of thought on this, but I am a firm believer that the best three-point defense is running people off the three-point line in general. There are so many good shooters out there. There's so many teams that can shoot that it's like with the Warriors. I mean, you know, they can kill you from there. You got to run them off the line as best you can and make them beat you inside, and they can do that. They can definitely do that, but make them do that. I'm a believer that, you know, the best three-point defense is not allowing the shot to be taken, because, you know, it's pretty variable as to whether it goes in or not, but you can't make a three that you don't take, and I still will stick by that in terms of the defense. Question from Desmond at D_Jax89, who says, Peter, how do you see the rotation lining up if and when everyone is healthy, excluding Brandon Wright? Well, I hope someday that will happen. I'm thinking Fizz, Desmond continues, I'm thinking Fizz goes nine deep, but who's the odd man out on the bench given Troy Daniels' recent surge? That's a good question. And, you know, you have to kind of adjust when the rotation, when you bring back Mike Conley and James Ennis and you bring back Chandler Parsons, you know, then all of a sudden, I think right out of the gate, Troy Williams is going to be the odd man out, because so much of what he does at that wing spot is better done by Chandler Parsons. So he would not, I think he would instantly, you know, be the odd man out. You know, if Vince Carter is back, then, you know, that's another reason to take away some of those minutes from Troy Williams. But I think Troy Williams is maximizing what he has been given thus far. And he has proven himself to be an NBA player. He's definitely an NBA guy. He has a spot. He has an athletic ability, getting to the basket. He deserves a spot, and he will have a spot. But I think in this situation, he would be the guy that would be the odd man out when everyone is healthy. I think also you will see Wade Baldwin be the other guy that would be the odd man out in that scenario, because once you bring back James Ennis, then the minutes for Baldwin off the ball go down. And I think at this point, even despite some struggles of late, Andrew Harrison is still ahead of Wade Baldwin in terms of the point guard rankings for the Grizzlies. So in the short term, I would imagine that it would be Harrison who would get the bulk of those minutes, and that you would see Wade Baldwin go probably back down to Iowa for a little while to try to hone his game. Good question, Desmond. Thank you very much. Final question comes from hashtag Nasty9Grizz, 15-8, a.k.a. at It's Grizz Time with two Z's. He wants to know, Peter, does Mike Wazowski wink or blink? This is the hard-hitting question we need to finish with. Wazowski, the cycloptic protagonist in the Monsters, Inc. franchise, one of my favorites. Get a chance to rewatch those with the kids now. It's a good excuse. He has one eye. So, and I posed this to my wife, in fairness. It made me think. I think he blinks because it's all he can do. That's his full, it's 100% of his eyes. He's closing, that's a blink. he, in order for him to wink, he will have to differentiate his blink somehow. He will have to blink with one, the right side of his eyelid halfway down and the left side up. That's a Mike Wazowski. That's what they call a Wazowski wink. We've all heard that phrase before. That's a Wazowski wink. So the answer is Nasty Nine Grizz. Mike Wazowski blinks. Thank you for the questions. Keep sending them in at Peter Edmiston. You can email me peter@peteredmiston.com. Thanks for sending those questions into the old Locked On Grizzlies mailbag. How do you quantify this clutch season for the Grizzlies? How do you put it into numbers? How do you put it into words, frankly, for that matter? I mean, forget about quantify. How do you just discuss it? It's amazing. I talked to my dad on the phone yesterday, and he talked about how frustrating an experience it was for him to watch the Grizzlies. And he said, I'm just going to turn it on the last 3 minutes and be done with it. That would be okay for most games. That's probably just as well. It'll save you some agita of watching a bunch of weird plays and frustrating plays and everything else. And then just fast forward to the part where the Grizzlies make every shot. That's what they do in the last 2 or 3 minutes, 30 seconds. Listen to these numbers. The Grizzlies have been behind by a possession or tied with 30 seconds or less to play in an NBA high 7 games this season, and they have won all 7. They've been involved in 11 one-possession games with a minute or less to play, and they have won all 11. That's crazy clutch performing. That's off the charts clutch performing. How about this? The Grizzlies have made just 3.2% of all three-pointers made in the NBA this year. 3.2%. But they have made 18.1% of all the threes made in the last 30 seconds of one possession games. And Marc Gasol's made 3 of them. Marc Gasol's 3 of 6 in those situations. As you know, Marc Gasol is an NBA best plus 20 in one possession games with 30 seconds or less to play. Jermichael Green is 2nd in that at plus 16, and Andrew Harrison is tied with Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard for 3rd at plus 13. You know, the plus minus is a little, you know, it's always a little nebulous. It's always a little tricky in those kinds of situations because you're just not dealing with tons and tons of data. But it does square with what we have seen. These teams, these guys just, when the chips are down, man, I don't know what it is, but they can perform. And they do perform, and they have an incredible knack for getting it done. And the thing is that no one has an explanation for this. No one has an adequate explanation other than it's just like that's who they are. But that doesn't really explain it. It doesn't really explain why guys miss tons of shots but then make them down the stretch. It doesn't really explain how a team that doesn't shoot threes all that well shoots them extremely well when the chips are down. It doesn't explain any of that stuff. And I don't have a good explanation other than continuity and DNA and clutch genes. And I don't know. You know, they don't even have Mike Conley. Mike Conley is, you know, one of the clutchest guys out there, and he's not even playing. So your guess is as good as mine, but the numbers are extraordinary with this team. And speaking of numbers, I'm about to hit you with a serious dose of numbers. So if you are averse to numbers, you may want to skip the next 10 minutes or so of the pod. But if you like them, like I like them, then sit back and enjoy, because I think you're going to have a little fun with this next upcoming segment. Now, those of you that know me, and if you've listened to this podcast for a while, I feel like you do kind of know me, then you know I love the numbers. You know I love all kinds of numbers. You know I'm into analysis, data, that kind of stuff. I'm into it. And so I'm hoping you are too, because I'm going to try to give you a few here. This is going to be something I'll do periodically And I can do it, in fact, to some extent on a request. If you have a particular thing you'd like me to look for or to kind of tease out from the numbers, you can send me a tweet or something like that at Peter Edmiston. I'll do that. But I wanted to give you a snapshot of what the Grizzlies look like offensively, at least, and maybe to some extent defensively, based on the efficiency numbers from our friends over at Synergy Sports. And I can do that because of the great technology that they've got, and I am a big proponent of that for sure. They do awesome work over there. You can check out what they do. But they categorize every possession in the NBA. They categorize every player. They've done it for well over a decade. And so you can look at how they characterize it, and it gives you a good idea of what your team, and in this case, of course, the Grizzlies, what they're all about, what they do, what they face, the kind of thing that they do. And so let me give you a little snapshot of what their offense looks like. 20.5% of the time, the play that they run ends in a spot-up shot. And in that capacity, that's the most often, and for most teams, to be fair, that's generally the most common, what they call play type. Because most plays end up, you know, that's not uncommon for plays to end up with somebody taking a spot-up shot. You know, maybe a catch-and-shoot, or maybe you take it and you take a dribble and then whatever. But that's roughly what you're dealing with when you're dealing with a spot-up type situation. And for the Grizzlies overall, they are not good. They are 28th out of the 30 NBA teams in terms of points per possession on their spot-up shooting, 0.907, shooting 35.7% as a team in those situations. The best spot-up shooter actually has been Mike Conley. No surprise there. Second best for the Grizzlies has been Marc Gasol, and James Ennis has been just behind him. Then Chandler Parsons, in his brief time, showed some glimmers of hope as a spot-up shooter. You know, Troy Daniels, unfortunately, because of his incredibly bad start, what he has done over the last few games, notwithstanding Tuesday, he still is the poorest, or almost the poorest, of the spot-up shooters. The only two guys that are worse, Wade Baldwin and Andrew Harrison. Andrew Harrison, the worst of the bunch, shooting 20.5% from his spot-up shots overall. Next up for the Grizzlies is pick-and-roll ball handler offense. So this is where you run pick-and-roll, and the ball handler ends up taking a shot or taking it to the basket, you know, something like that. That is 14.3% of their offense. They rank 17th overall in the NBA in that regard, shooting 37.3%. And Mike Conley in that has been their best weapon. You would not be surprised to find that out. Although in a very, very small sample size, Troy Daniels has been excellent as the ball handler in pick and roll. Just FYI, keep that in mind. It's a very small sample size. You're talking 12 possessions, but he scored 23 points overall, 8 of 9 shooting in those situations. He is technically the most efficient pick-and-roll ball-handling player in the entire NBA at this moment, but that's a very, very small sample size, so keep that in mind. But that's a little bit of a stunning stunning number for sure. So that's the pick-and-roll ball-handling side of it. The next most common play type for the Grizzlies, post-up, and this is a number that has dwindled over the years, but it still comprises almost 12% of the Grizzlies' offense, and in this they are excellent. They are fifth in the NBA in terms of points per possession, 49.1% overall on those shots, and it will not surprise you to find out that the best of the bunch is Vince Carter. Yes, technically it is Vince Carter who is the best of the bunch in his limited time, but really Marc Gasol is the guy that has had the vast majority of the post-up possessions. He's had 52% of the Grizzlies' post-up possessions, in fact, because, well, you know, he's out there all the time. He plays more minutes than anybody else. Zach Randolph has had 28.4% of the Grizzlies' post-up possessions. But Mark is more efficient in the post these days than Zach. Mark ranks in the top 70 or so, or the top 30%, I should say, of NBA players. Almost 1 point per possession, which is quite good in that regard. Zach is a little further back. He's a little bit better than half of those in the NBA, but he has not had a vintage run in the post. So that's the post-up offense for the Grizzlies. That's their best actual thing that they do overall is the post. Next up for the Grizzlies is transition. They've bumped this number up. They are 10% of their possessions end in transition baskets, and they are very good comparatively in the NBA, 11th overall. But transition always has a higher ceiling. You know, there's always like certain things like isolation plays, which we'll get to, are always pretty low when one guy's just kind of doing stuff on his own. The efficiency in general is really low. Even the top teams that are efficient in that struggle to get to 1 point per possession. Whereas transition, because it tends to end pretty well, when you have transition baskets, you have them for a reason. So even if you're 11th, you're still talking about 1.1 points per possession, which is better than just about anything else that the Grizzlies will do out there. So that's a big bonus for them. And the fact that they've gotten that up to 10% of the time is a good sign for the Grizzlies going forward. They've been dynamite in transition in the limited time that they've been. And you know who the best transition player for the Grizzlies happens to be? Troy Daniels. Very limited time, of course, but Troy Daniels in the 98th percentile overall. Very, very good in the NBA. And again, it's a very small sample size. A much bigger sample size, well, I say much bigger, it's about twice as big as Troy Daniels' sample size, is Jermichael Green, who was in the 94th percentile overall at almost 1.5 points per possession in transition. He's done a really, really good job of that. But the Grizzlies have had so many different guys finishing in transition. It's very spread out over the entire team, which is a good sign. It tells you kind of what they do overall. They really have a lot of different guys that can leak out. And the next up is a pick and roll, the roll man side of the offense. And this has not been very good for the Grizzlies. They're poor, 28th out of 30 teams in that. In general, the pick and roll has not been all that great for the Grizzlies. A little better with the ball handler, but overall it has not been as productive as most teams would like to see. Marc Gasol as the roll man, that means the screener, and then the offense goes to the screener, and whether he rolls to the basket or whether he pops out or whatever he does. In those pick and roll types of situations, Marc has just been okay. 46th percentile, 0.97 points per possession. Zach Randolph has been very poor in those situations. Jarrell Martin has been very poor in those situations. We're talking 5th percentile, 0.6 points per possession. And Jermichael Green has merely just been a little worse than average, actually, 32nd percentile overall and about a 10th of a point per possession behind Marc Gasol. And you say these points per possession, you know, a 10th of a point here. But think about it, over the course of 100 possessions, that adds up to a big, big deal. Grizzlies next up is in isolation, 7.5% of the time, and they are below average there too, ranking 24th. Best isolation player has been Andrew Harrison in very limited time. He has averaged exactly 1 point per possession in isolation, shooting 57.1%. from the field, and including some threes in that. That's been his best and most productive thing, which is kind of tells you the sort of player that Andrew Harrison has been out there. The next isolation guys, Mike Conley is the most common isolation guy for the Grizzlies, and he's pretty good in that regard, 67th percentile. Zach Randolph is next, Marc Gasol after him, and then Andrew Harrison follows him up. Everybody else is a very small portion of that. Grizzlies have their next part of their offense comes from cuts. They are also poor at that, 26th percentile overall. You know, Tony Allen, by far the most common cutter to the basket, but he finishes pretty poorly, as you would expect, 11th percentile in cuts. Jermichael Green is the second most common cutter, and he's even worse, 6th percentile in terms of finishing, according to Synergy Sports. That's not great. Deontay Davis, in very, very limited time, He is a perfect 7-for-7 in his finishes off cuts to the basket. And a couple of those have included being fouled. He's made the foul shots. So he's averaging 1.7 points per possession. That puts him in the 96th percentile. But again, we're talking just 10 possessions. So a very small sample size there. Grizzlies, the rest of the offense comes off of putbacks, off of screens, off of dribble handoffs, and then what is termed miscellaneous, which is all the other stuff that happens on the court that you can't necessarily quite characterize. And in that regard, the Grizzlies are just mostly okay. All of that leads to an offense that is below average, 25th in terms of points per possession overall. But, you know, that's never been the Grizzlies, you know, even with this new look, even with trying to spread the floor, even with all the things that David Fizdale has wanted to do. You know, there is the injuries, the flux, all of that has really contributed to making it hard for the Grizzlies to get that offense rolling. And we have seen it in recent games where it's the defense where, as Tony Allen would say, they still hang their hats. They still hang their hats defensively. And I want to give you one defensive number from Synergy. The Synergy numbers defensively are much better for the Grizzlies. They're the 11th best in terms of points per possession in the league. But one interesting bit of data that is good, they are the best in the league in short shot clock situations. So 4 seconds or less on the shot clock, they are the best in the business in terms of that. They allow teams to shoot just 27% overall in those scenarios. And how about this? Teams that take jump shots in a short shot clock situation, and that happens almost 9% of the time with the Grizzlies only allow them to shoot 18.8% from the field. That is by far and away the best in the league. And to compare the team that is in last place in that stat, the Houston Rockets, they allow teams to shoot 38.8%. Grizzlies 18.8% in those short shot clock jump shot situations, the Houston Rockets 38.8%. So anyway, I know there's a lot of numbers. I feel like I might have overwhelmed you with some numbers. So if I did, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that. But I wanted you to know where things stood right now for the Grizzlies on offense and to give you some of the ideas of what guys are doing and just some of the analysis that's out there that you can't just get anywhere. Because it can help you kind of understand what's going on with the team and what they're doing. And there are a few surprises in there too. So I will do that from time to time, just to kind of give you a little overview. And if you like it, great. If not, then you can, you know, fast forward through that part of the pod to the next part if you want. But hopefully you like it. If you do, let me know. And let me know if there's anything specific that you want me to look at. And I can do that going forward. But in the meantime, that is the look statistically at the Grizzlies. Just wanted to knock out a few, administrative things or whatever before we wrap up this edition of Locked On Grizzlies. First of all, just to let you know, there won't be a pod tomorrow. Normally there would be on a Friday morning, but as I have told you before, and I want to remind you again, especially for those of you that happen to be in the Memphis area, this Friday is a annual thing that that we do over at my station, Sports 56 and 87.7 FM. It's something that I have worked on for a long time and partnered with Mid-South Toys for Tots and the Marine Corps League here in town to get a radiothon together and to do our shows all day long and to raise as much money and get as many toys as we possibly can for the kids of the Mid-South. And so because the event takes such a long time and is such a difficult thing to put together, it's just going to be, I won't be able to go to the game tomorrow night, and I won't be able to give you a pod that would be up to the standard that I would want to. So I'm going to have to take tomorrow off from the pod. We will be back over the weekend, of course, and on Monday morning with everything that you need to know, including a recap of that Warriors game on Saturday. But just wanted to let you know there won't be a pod tomorrow. But please, 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 please.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our four-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our two-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.